I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people developing online communication systems that don't fund anti-Christian companies and providing a wide range of top-notch homeschooling programs. Join us. Sit back and enjoy some free expression. There was a time when homeschooling required a good deal of improvisation. Parents who wanted to free their children from public education, especially those concerned about the anti-Christian bias that was starting to be felt in government schools, had to do a lot of searching for instructional materials, enrichment projects, classic works of literature. It was a challenge. These days, homeschooling has matured. There's a wide array of curricular programs for homeschool families, and among the most complete and sophisticated for Catholic homeschoolers is Colby Academy. Dr. Jordan Almanzar represents Colby, and he's here to provide a glimpse of this valuable education resource. Jordan, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Quite a few Catholic radio listeners homeschool. Please give us the big picture on Colby and what it has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. So Colby has been around a long time. It was founded in 1980 as a day school in Napa, California, with what you mentioned, sort of freeing children from public school. It was founded by a few parents who had the idea that we can go back to the classic works and we can teach from a Catholic worldview. And so a few families started this private school, and that lasted about 7 years until some people who were joining this Colby Academy movement in Napa moved away, and they wanted to continue this sort of education. So it was really kind of an outreach from there to send them materials and just sort of organically grow what Colby was able to offer, and became a homeschool curriculum that they kind of patched together in the early years. And over time, it became more and more sophisticated, more and more developed. When I joined in 2013, they had just launched the Online Academy. And so Colby's always been about empowering the parents and giving them the choice of education and helping in whatever way that we can do so. So one of the things that I think is really unique about Colby is that we offer any sort of help from just giving a little bit of guidance on the phone once in a while or completely leaving people alone, just providing the materials, all the way to you can be a full-time online student, and it's as though you're going to a school. It's online, and you're outsourcing all the grading, all the teaching, all the instruction. You're outsourcing that to teachers that we have assembled across the country and even across the world. We have some internationally based teachers doing various things at Colby. So it's sort of a movement to help everybody. And one of the principles of Colby is the principle of subsidiarity, which is that decisions should be made at the smallest level. That boils down to the family, and that really at the heart of what we try to do at Colby, help families educate the children in the way that they would like to do so or that they feel called to do so.
Two things sort of leap out at me just glancing through your website here. One is the Catholic character of it, which is a dominant feature. And the other is this flexibility that you describe. The parents and the kids can approach this in a variety of ways.
That's very true. That's at the heart of all the decisions that we make. How do we make it customizable for families so that it works with them? Because, as you know, in our day, a lot of people that would love to stay at home and be able to spend the time educating their children, they may have to work or they may have a part-time job somewhere. So a lot of what we do is with them in mind. I mean, that is... We're trying to make it available to everybody so that there's really no excuse that I'm not able to do this. We try to make it work for everyone.
Since this is so broadly based geographically, I assume that different states have different requirements that homeschool kids have to meet. How do you bridge those gaps? How do you make sure that the kids are getting covered in terms of what their local requirements are?
Yeah, that's very true. It is very different state to state. We have what we call an academic advising team, and they're really knowledgeable for each state. So if a parent calls in, Pennsylvania is one of those states where it's more difficult to homeschool in terms of what you have to show that you're doing legit education. Somebody calls in from Pennsylvania, there are people on staff who really know the ins and outs of the requirements for each state. And then we're also accredited, so you will be working towards an accredited diploma based in California where Colby's headquarters are. So it makes it pretty easy. I mean, you can homeschool anywhere. In fact, it's completely illegal in Germany and other European countries, Spain being one of them. But there are even loopholes and workarounds where we're kind of growing internationally with people in Spain being able to say we're in an American online school that's accredited and they're able to homeschool even there. But in terms of the U.S., yeah, we have every state covered.
Is this bound to time? If somebody wants to take an online course, is it offered in real time? They have to plug in at a specific time in the day? Or is it pre-recorded and they can come in at any time?
So we have both options available. There is the pre-recorded, where we call this self-paced. And even within that, there's some flexibility. They can just get the videos and watch those on their time and have the parents do the grading, or they can outsource some of the grading. But then the other end of the spectrum is that there would be set times and set meetings and attendance is required. It's not every day. It depends on the subject. It's one or two meetings a week. And then you have to submit your work or do a quiz or something weekly. So that's the full online option. But even with that, you can choose, maybe I can't teach chemistry, and so I outsource that course. But then there are plenty of families who outsource everything, and they just say, let's do it all online. And those families, they would be bound to getting their kids logged in and the kids being present at each class because attendance is taken. But because of the flexibility, we're very generous. A lot of times if somebody wants to sort of take a week off because they're traveling and all of that, then they can take advantage of watching the recordings and communicating with their teacher. So still handing back that authority to the parents wherever possible.
One of the things that you hear most frequently as a criticism of homeschooling is that the children are isolated. They don't have the socialization that they would get in an ordinary classroom, that it's hard for them to interact with their peers and to make friends. How do you address that concern?
Yeah, I think that is a criticism that you still hear it, but I feel like I'm hearing it less and less. In other words, homeschooling has really proven itself. There are a lot of people out in the world now that are products of homeschooling, and you can just see that they are well-adjusted. They are, for lack of a better term, normal people, and oftentimes you see them as very, very good people. I have the advantage. I also teach at college, and at the college, very often someone will come up and shake my hand and introduce themselves as a freshman, and they show this confidence. One of the things, I learned this from my colleague, Anthony Esselin, he mentioned that he used to do this, so I started doing it as well. I asked that student, did you happen to be homeschooled? And I would say 99% of the time, the answer is yes. And so homeschooling gives the opportunity that students aren't locked into, okay, I'm an eighth grader, so I act one way around my eighth grade peers, but anyone above me or below me, I feel out of sorts when I'm around these people. And I see it with my own children who are homeschooled. They'll talk to old people. They'll talk to young people. These kind of artificial categories of what grade you're in go away. And that plays into adulthood, I think, because these kind of students, they're comfortable in their own skin, and they're comfortable with all the generations because they've been around them, especially having the time to homeschool. One of the things we have at Colby, it's kind of a tagline, is embrace the fifth day. And that means take Friday and go to a museum or go visit a nursing home or go do something, go to an orchard, do something with the family. So the kids are getting this interaction with the broader society, and that really, really helps them, I think, when they become adults, that they feel comfortable and they know where to show respect. So they come up to the professor and introduce themselves, and they handle themselves very confidently. So as far as that criticism or potential criticism, I don't think that it's true. People use it, but I say, look around. There are more homeschoolers than there's ever been, more products of homeschooling than there's ever been, and they're oftentimes wonderful people.
What about the religious aspect? How does the Catholic perspective color this approach?
With Colby, it's at the center of everything. We pray before live classes. There's a prayer. Even the videos that we make, the teacher leads a prayer at the beginning. We pray at the end of class. There are several different clubs that are religious life clubs. They lead the rosary once a week where you can tune in and pray the rosary with other kids from across the country, across the world, and teachers as well. And I go back to the founding of Colby, and in those years when they were developing the curriculum, they chose Maximilian Colby before he was canonized. He became the patron, and then he became canonized quickly after that. He is our patron, and so we draw from his life and his works wherever possible. And then also Ignatian. They had the foresight, these founders did, back in the 80s, to say that we are Ignatian in method. Well, that has always been kind of a, you know, if you Google Ignatian method, it means one thing. There's a specific Ignatian method approach that's at Colby, and we're really working to make that even more prominent in everything that we do. And it's sort of based on Ignatius's spiritual exercises, but it's very different. So if any of the listeners Google Ignatian method, they would have to look more specifically at how Colby does it. It's very different than what most of the Jesuit schools out there are doing. But it is Ignatian. So Ignatian spirituality and method in education is front and center at Colby as well.
So where do people go to find out more information and learn how they might be able to sign their kids up?
Yeah, go to colby.org is the place to start. There are a handful of videos right there on the homepage. There's a phone number. So there's always very low commitment. You can call and talk to an advisor, and these advisors have talked to thousands of families, and they're very, very good and trained at how to customize it. So just get in touch with us. If you want, you could just go to the website and sort of poke around. You can learn a lot. Colby.org, K-O-L-B-E. org. I would start there. I would advise people to just have a look there first.
Jordan Almanzar of Colby Academy. Hey, thanks very much. This sounds like a fascinating and comprehensive program. I imagine it would be very useful to a lot of listeners.
Well, I really appreciate it, Bill. I want to spread the good news about homeschooling wherever I can, so thank you for this opportunity.
Online communications are pretty much indispensable in both our personal and business lives. Email, texting, social networking. After several decades in the wireless world, it's hard to remember a time when we wrote letters by hand or picked up telephone receivers attached to their bases. But with instantaneous contact has come a certain level of insecurity, even fear. Strange things are happening out there. How does that dog food company know I have a golden retriever? How come I clicked on that power tool ad out of curiosity and now my email inbox is jammed with offers from Ace Hardware? Is someone bugging my online life? Michael DiStefano is co-founder of Fide Technology, a Catholic communications company that's working to improve online security and protect our privacy. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I know you've got plans for a whole line of online products, but what's up and running now?
Yeah, so first, that was a really good introduction. I think I was at the tail end of that era, where I do remember picking up a landline. I remember when you didn't have to type in the area code either when you're calling locally. But I think I was at the tail end of that. So we offer email and calendars, just your basic email and calendars that everybody needs. And then on top of that, we also offer for organizations, they can have email at their own domain, so you know to maintain your organization's brand and everything like that. So it would be the same to manage your website. And we also offer cloud storage, very similar to Google Drive or Dropbox or something like that. And we also offer collaborative document editing, which includes like Word sort of style documents, spreadsheets, and presentations.
What makes your company specifically Catholic? Why is there even a faith dimension involved here?
The technology itself is not Catholic per se. It's really the people who make it. The origin of this happened when I was living in San Francisco working in the tech industry, and I noticed that a lot of things were happening at a lot of these big companies that myself and my friends were working for that was having to sort of test our faith, and we had to compromise with a lot of things. And I felt very uncomfortable with that. And around that time, I was reading a book called The Benedict Option, and sort of a light bulb went off, and I said, well, how can we apply this to technology, to my own industry? And so I contacted my pastor and ended up giving a talk called Engineering the Benedict Option. And so what we kind of started with was creating alternatives for employment, ideally, eventually, alternative products that you don't have to compromise with your faith or morals. You don't have to support companies that are going to turn around and give money to Planned Parenthood, or worse, a lot of these companies, when Roe was repealed, will, I know a lot of them because I have friends who work there, they sent out an internal email saying that we'll fly you. If your state doesn't support abortion, we'll fly you to California so you can get an abortion. So ultimately, it's the company and the people behind the product.
There is kind of a spiritual aspect of this, if you will, when we see what the web seems to know about us, how they make connections to various aspects of our personal lives. The whole business of data mining is kind of spooky and a little scary. How does that work? Could you clarify that for us, please?
Sure. Yeah. So, many of us are probably familiar with the phrase that our grandparents told us, nothing in life is free. And yet all these online services seem to be free. And so you kind of have to ask yourself the question, qui bono, who benefits?
Right.
And who, these companies' valuations, you look at their stock tickers and things like that, and they're worth billions and billions of dollars, and yet they're giving stuff away for free. So you have to say, okay, well, how are they making money? And 9 times out of 10, probably more than that, it's usually by selling your data or using your data in some way. And over the years, there's evolved this sort of cat-and-mouse game with blocking data mining and then more sophisticated ways of data mining and ascertaining who you are and what your interests are and things like that, very personal information. And to the point where we are today, that it's not nearly as simple as it once was to sort of block this stuff. And the ways in which these companies, these big corporations are gaining information about your interests and who you are, your political leanings, your religious faith, everything like that, they're increasingly sophisticated. So to give one example, most people are probably familiar with cookies. Cookies are pieces of information that when you're browsing the web, when you go to a website, it'll store a cookie in your browser sometimes. And usually this was used to store your account information so it remembers you. Well, this was abused and used to store information about you, and then when you go to a different website and things like that, they could figure out who you are. And so we kind of developed ways to block that, and then the ad tech companies like Google and Facebook and stuff like that developed sophisticated ways around that. And right now we have something called fingerprinting. And fingerprinting, like the name implies, is identifying who you are without a exact digital signature, but based on different habits you have. Everything from the speed at which you type, the errors you have when you type, to how your individual device and browser and all the extensions you have installed, that unique combination, how it would render an image or something like that. And so, we've gotten to the point where these companies are overtly trying to circumvent privacy protections. And so I think we've kind of lost the plot here a little bit.
What does that tell them? I mean, what advantage do they gain in knowing my typing skills?
They don't care about your typing skills, but your typing skills, just like your handwriting, is unique to you. And so it's just another data point that they use to identify you. For instance, a huge percentage, I forget the exact number, but I want to say it's over like 70% or something of websites in the United States have Google Analytics. Don't quote me on that number. I don't remember the exact off the top of my head. But and a large portion have Facebook, tracking pixels installed and stuff like that. And so when you go to any of these sites that have this Google thing, Google can get a picture of all the different sites that you go to that have this sort of tracking pixel or this analytics code installed. They might not be able to tie that to you, right? Because you're not necessarily logged into Google or something like that. But when you are logged into Google, now I'm not saying Google does this specifically with the typing speed or anything like that. I'm just giving examples of how these companies can do this. So when you're typing an email or something, they could analyze your typing speed and then kind of identify that with when you log into another website, the way you move your mouse. And so they're able to kind of build this picture and track you across all these different websites. It's very sophisticated how they're able to do this and the various data points, like typing speed is just one data point that they're able to use.
Boy, this all really stokes my paranoia. In light of the recent scandal about the FBI trying to gather information in Catholic parishes, am I too paranoid to fear that my religious identity as a Catholic could be exploited or turned against me in some way?
No, I don't think that's too paranoid. But I do want to say that the way that I view this is, you know, we can focus on privacy and things like that. And, I've got some resources that I can share with your listeners and with you for that. But ultimately, it is this cat and mouse game. And really, you can kind of step out of the game altogether is kind of what I'm getting at with this Benedict option. We don't have to give these big companies all of our data. And if we operate a website, we can do so responsibly. We shouldn't include Google Analytics. There are alternatives. I'll just say Plausible Analytics is one that we use that is a privacy-respecting analytics tool that won't follow users around when they visit our website. There's a surplus of alternatives out there, and it's kind of like I say, you know, the Catholic answer to big tech, just like the answer to, let's say, Walmart or something like that, isn't Whole Foods, you know, or in the Catholic answer to big tech isn't big Catholic tech. It's small sort of local farms in the food sphere, and in our sphere, it's small companies. And getting back to that local thing, and there's this sort of image in the internet age that there winner takes all, and everything has to consolidate into these large conglomerates. And it really doesn't have to be that way. The internet was designed in a decentralized fashion, and if we stick to technologies that are standards-based, it allows small players like Fide to compete with large players like Google and Facebook. And I think that's really the way forward here. Rather than, you know, building up larger and larger fortresses and shields and stuff like that and going against Goliath, well, maybe we just kind of circumvent that altogether and start buying our bread from a local baker, if you will.
Well, this does tie into all the talk we're hearing about building alternative economies and Christian communities and all of that. I know the social network Gab is very much into that, promoting the alternative economy for Christians. Tell us about how people can find out more about your services and get in touch with you.
We're called Fide, which is a Latin word for faith, and you search for us and, you know, don't use Google, but use your favorite search engine and search for Fide Mail or just type in fide.email. And like I said earlier, if we really piggyback on these decentralized open technologies, email being one of them, we can compete. You know, if you think about email, right, if you have a Gmail address, you can send an email to a Yahoo address. Whereas if you look at Facebook Messenger or something, all your friends have to be using Facebook Messenger in order to communicate. But email is inherently this decentralized technology. No one company has control of it. And so if you have a Fide email address, you can send an email to Gmail and vice versa. And so that's really been our strategy here. We recognize that all these open technologies do exist, and rather than letting them become dominated by big players, we want to keep them open, and we want to encourage others to do the same, to create companies based on these open standards and kind of enable small business on the internet.
All of this really harkens back to what I was hearing when I first became aware of the internet. I guess it was in the late 80s. The pitch then was that this was going to be decentralized and it was going to promote democracy at the grassroots level. But it didn't turn out that way. It turned out that all the big operators took it over and got everybody walking in lockstep. So you're really kind of getting back to the roots of this dream.
It is, and that kind of brings us full circle to the beginning. I said nothing is free, and if you look at the history, you know, to oversimplify a little bit, a lot of this consolidation happened because of free. You know, Gmail, I think I got a Gmail account in like 2006 or 2007 or something like that because they were giving it away for free. And that's really how these companies did it. You know, they gave away their product for free, and everybody just kind of said, okay, sign me up. And then we forgot that nothing is free.
Yeah.
And in doing so, we've really given them this large influence to create all these sort of anti-patterns and make the web much more centralized.
Michael DiStefano, FIDE Technologies, thanks for taking a couple minutes to talk about this. This is something that people really need to investigate and think hard about and pray about, because it really has to do with our freedom and our ability to live our own lives in the way we feel directed by God.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Bill.
The Latin term FIDE is spelled F-I-D-E-I. So FIDE Technology can be found online at FIDEI.email. If you've been listening to these shows online but would like to hear them on the radio, tell your local Catholic station. Free Expression with Bill Castle is available for broadcast free of charge. Ask your Catholic station to contact us by email, billcastle@sbcglobal.net. That's B-I-L-L-K-A-S-S-E-L, all one word. billcastle@sbcglobal.net. Don't forget to support your local station. In this time of censorship and so-called cancel culture, Catholic radio is becoming increasingly important as an alternative media source. Our programming is based on the Word of God and the teaching of His Church, and we bring you the factual, truthful information you aren't getting from the mainstream media. Support Catholic Radio. Your generosity keeps Catholic outlets on the air, and donations to broadcast ministries can be tax-deductible. Urge your friends and relatives to tune in as well. And please, let me know what you think about these shows. Tell me what books you're reading, what media you follow, what sort of music communicates with your soul. I'd love your suggestions on topics we might explore that touch the lives of Catholics today. BillCastle@sbcglobal.net. Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Kuras provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.